Are highly creative people more likely to be mentally ill? We asked Tamar Brott to try to separate the truth from the myth.
Hi, you've reached the American Institute for Medical Education and the Creativity and Madness Conferences.
Los Angeles-based psychiatrist Dr. Barry Panter has been hosting his Creativity and Madness seminars for the past 20 years. Mostly they're attended by people in the medical profession.
Here are some of the titles of the presentations. Janis Joplin, Fame, Drugs, and the Quest for Serenity. Iggy Pop, Narcissist, Shaman, and Wounded Child.
No one has been able to scientifically define what creativity is, but there are some basic schools of thought about where it comes from. The most romantic being that it's born of pain and can't survive without it.
An example of this is the artist Edvard Munch. Munch had a very chaotic life. He was an alcoholic. He got into rages. He shot somebody, shot a finger off. And with all of this chaos, he was creating masterpieces. That picture of the Scream was created during that chaotic period in his life. Well, he got into therapy, and the therapy was, quote, successful, in that he calmed down and he lived a very mundane life. His creativity was gone.
Among the less romantic theories is that it's an occupational hazard, especially if you're a poet.
One of the characteristics of poetry is it tends to be reflective. It tends to be introspective. Then if you look at people who are introspective and reflective, they tend to ruminate and brood. If you look at people who ruminate and brood, they tend to be depressed.
That's psychologist James Kaufman. A few years ago, he got a lot of attention for a study he conducted showing that famous female poets were more likely to commit suicide than other famous artists. It turns out there's an entire body of scholarship devoted to searching for signs of mental illness in famous dead artists.
What myself, as well as other scholars have done, is they've looked at what's called historiometric research, where they read biographies of eminent people and coded them for signs of mental illness, which could include suicide attempts, hospitalizations, things like that.
And what's striking is that the literature is really quite consistent across all different methodologies, across different kinds of populations, which is to say a very much increased rate of mood disorders, particularly bipolar disorder, but also depression in highly imaginative artists and writers.
That's psychologist Kay Redfield Jamison. In 1993, Jamison, who is bipolar herself, published the groundbreaking book Touched with Fire, in which she documented the bipolar symptoms in an exhaustive list of artists. Among the artists thought to be bipolar are William Blake, Jack London, Herman Melville, Virginia Woolf, and Ernest Hemingway, to name only a few.
Mania, like many drug-induced states, is a disinhibiting state, so that, I mean, people get uninhibited.
The human brain actually becomes more creative during mild mania, Jamison says.
One of the things that's part and parcel of creativity is coming up with new associations. So, for example, if you give somebody a word and you ask them to come up with as many other words that they can think of, and what's been shown is that people, when they're mildly manic, come up with three times as many original associations.
She says mania also increases output.
One of the things that happens when people get manic is that they have a sense of urgency to paint, to write poetry, but to act upon that as well. And that's an enormously important thing because, again, an awful lot of people have ideas, but they don't necessarily execute those ideas.
Ladies and gentlemen, the best singer-songwriter alive today, Daniel Johnston.
One of the most well-known bipolar artists today is indie musician and artist Daniel Johnston.
True love will find you in the end. You'll find out just who was your friend.
Daniel's best friend since high school said even back then that Daniel is literally a vessel that creates art. It just passes through him. It's all he actually can do.
Jeff Yurzik is the director of a new documentary about Johnston called The Devil and Daniel Johnston.
Say hi to everyone.
My name is Daniel Johnston. This is the name of my tape, and it's Hi, How Are You? And I was having a nervous breakdown when I recorded it.
It's almost a form of Tourette's or something. I don't know. It just can't stop. He can't turn it off.
I'm hiding out where you can't see. Behind a wall. In the back of the room.
In the 1980s, Johnston was a fixture in the underground music scene. You'd see him on MTV, and Kurt Cobain used to go around wearing Daniel Johnston t-shirts. But the thing about bipolar artists is they usually peak young, and Johnston was no exception. In his case, his highs got way too high.
And when he got too high, he was dangerous to himself and other people. He hit his first manager over the head with a lead pipe. He threw an old lady from church at a second-story window. He was trying not to kill her. He thought she was possessed by Satan, and he was trying to save her, to exorcise her demons.
I am walking the cow.
As a result of these and other incidents, Johnston was institutionalized and put on medication called Haldol, which Furzik says killed his creativity.
It's heartbreaking, and that was his lost year. He spent an entire year in bed because of Haldol, so the medication totally killed him. It put him in that horrible place, the middle.
Is it a lot harder to write songs now?
Yes, because I'm all dried up. I couldn't write a song if I tried. Do-do-do. I couldn't write a song if I tried. Do-do-do.
There are psychiatrists who are conflicted by the idea of putting geniuses on psychotropic drugs.
It's very difficult to know what to do. You know, you want to take away the demons. You don't want to take away the angels. That's a gift. You don't want to touch that. Really, you don't even want to look at it.
And of course, the artists themselves worry about the effects of drugs on their creativity.
I notice that, like, I write happier songs when I'm on my meds, more positive songs, and when I'm off my meds, I completely go to this place of just...
That's Justin Furstenfeld, the lead singer of a band called Blue October.
I've got the mood that seems to carry on.
Justin's known for his brooding songs, and sometimes he'll go off his meds to give his fans what they want.
I know that, hey, I'm getting a little too happy, I need to write an album, okay, it's time to get off of them, which is really stupid, but it's also my job to be as creative as I can, so I feel like if I let people down that way, you know, by being healthy, you know, which sucks.
But Kay Jamison says that at least for artists who are bipolar, there's no scientific evidence showing that medication alters their output.
I think what you can say is that the two studies that have actually looked at artists and writers who were taking lithium, 3/4 of them said that they were as productive or more productive. And that's because periods of depression are very long-lasting, 9 to 12 months. So that's an incredibly long period of time to be not producing anything.
And those who do go off their meds often commit suicide or harm other people. In Daniel Johnston's case, he grabbed the controls of an airplane his father was piloting. Miraculously, they both survived the crash. But it's incidents like those that have caused Jamison to grow tired of the public's love affair with a mad genius.
Nobody's creating anything when there are 6-point restraints or on a hospital ward or obviously 6 feet under.
So why does the mad genius romance endure? Everyone I spoke to had their own theory. Justin Furstenfeld.
It comes from people needing some sort of explanation of why they don't act like them or why they're scared to go to the grocery store or why they don't want to touch certain things.
James Kaufman theorized that it might be garden variety jealousy.
It is certainly conceivable that people want to believe that they're mentally ill for the reason that it makes them feel better about not being good artists or poets themselves. It becomes, well, it's a good thing I don't write poetry. They're all crazy.
And Barry Panter said the question reminded him of a quote from Soren Kierkegaard.
He said, what is the poet? The poet is a nightingale who sings so sweetly, and he sings because he suffers. And the world looks at him and listens to him and says, suffer more so that you will sing sweeter songs for us. And I think that's what happens with the artist.
For Studio 360, I'm Tamar Braha.
Listen up and I'll tell a story about an artist growing old. Some would try for fame and glory. Others just like to watch the world.
You can find out more about creativity and mental illness and the work of Kay Redfield Jamison at studio360.org. Coming up, we'll hear more about creativity and the brain, and not just the human brain. elephants improvising, and other miracles. That is just ahead in Studio 360 from PRI, Public Radio International. Stay with us.